This is episode 8 of the Sales Strategy Podcast, and this is the one with Danny Allen Page. So Danny's a former professional footballer, but he's now the founder and director of Gravity 7, a disruptive digital marketing company based in London. Danny has grown his Instagram following in 2020 to just over 50,000 in under 10 months. All that by leveraging his personal brand and making himself forefront of everything that he does. We're going to be chatting about fear, overcoming fear, everything he's done to grow his Instagram to 50,000 followers, and a shed ton more. I really love chatting to Danny. Remember, if you want more information on the podcast, visit www.saleschange.co.uk/podcast. Sign up to the newsletter. Get it in your inbox every Monday morning at 9:45. Enjoy it. Danny Allen Page, welcome to the Sales Change Podcast. How are you, mate?
I'm good, mate. All good. Tired.
Apart from being tired, yeah.
Grafting, yeah.
What time do you get up, by the way? Because I see it on your stories.
It's normally between like 5 and 5:30. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, typically.
See, I go for a sea swim most mornings. I was in the sea this morning and I get up at 6:30. And even that kills me. So you're proper pushing it out.
Where are you to go and do that?
Down in Bournemouth.
That's it, Bournemouth, you said. Yeah, it's amazing. It looks amazing. I'd love to. It
was so nice. So nice. It's freezing this time of the year, but honestly, it gets your blood going. And you can't think of anything else when you're in the sea because it's so cold.
Are you doing that all year round?
I only started doing it maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago, but now I'm addicted to it, so yeah. I can't stop doing it.
I bet I'd be all over that.
But I go through phases. I was got my bike to the right hand side of me because I'm in my garage, and I was cycling for a huge amount of time in the summer, and then I just fell out of love with it. So and now the swimming's doing all right.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm doing a lot of all of that. Not enjoying none.
You're training for an Ironman, right?
Yeah, training for an Ironman. God knows why. Put it on the bucket list ages ago, and it's like, damn, I need to commit to it sooner rather than later. Otherwise, it's never going to get done.
So have you got an end date?
It's the 4th of July, if we can do it, obviously with COVID. But yeah, I've got a coach, got a strength coach, Ironman coach, swim coach, and just going at it. It's relentless. It's not even got hard, and I'm tired. So God knows what it's going to be like after Christmas.
What's your level of fitness? Because we'll get into what you used to do, but what's your level of fitness now?
Yeah, I train, man. Like, so fundamentally, health and fitness has always been like the foundation of me. Like, I just have always trained and worked hard, like in terms of training. I like that element, that mental element, more than anything else. People think it's because, you know, ego or like wanting to look good. I genuinely couldn't care. It's just that mental element of pushing yourself. I love it. I absolutely love doing challenges. I love doing stuff that's really hard.
Was that from school?
I've naturally always seen myself as like a workhorse rather than like super talented. So I've never looked at myself at being particularly talented at anything at all.
Just 100% effort.
I'm just all effort and determination. Grit. Grit's my favorite thing. So if I feel like I'm getting complacent in any area, I'll do a crazy challenge. And it just like, it's one of the most humbling things you can do as a human being is back yourself into a corner. And typically it's a physical act that will do that, where you're like, all right, you've signed up to this, you've committed. That's why people go and run marathons who can't run, never ran before. They commit to it, they get a charity to be behind it. Why can they then see it through?
I did a half marathon last year and it nearly killed me.
Did it?
Yeah.
You got.
Do you want me to tell you for why? Because I wore, do you know these like tight fitting legging jogger type things, and I wore them all the way around, and then I was about it's half marathon, so it's about 10 miles in, and they started chafing real bad, like seriously sore, and I had to take them off halfway round. So I had my bits in one hand trying to take these shorts down because they were just killing me. But then the damage had already been done.
Yeah, really put them off. I done the Isle of Wight challenge. So we had to go around the Isle of Wight as quickly as possible. The whole of the outside, it's like 106K. And it was grim, man. It was the worst.
Was that running or cycling?
Well, no, it was you could run or walk. We walked half of it. And then I was like, damn, this is going to take forever. It's like taking ages. I was like, we've got to start running and walking. So we'd run 1K, walk 1K. It took us like 21 hours to get around it, but it was horrendous, absolutely horrendous.
I'm not going to get doing that.
Anything like that, I love, because I think you find out who you are, man. In those dark moments, you find out what you've got, what you're capable of.
Yeah, for sure. So tell me about your journey. So what did you do when you left school?
So from school, I went straight into playing football. So I was playing for, at that time, Brentford FC, who shock missed out on promotion again this year. I think they could have gone to Premiership today.
Is that who you support?
No, I don't. I support Arsenal, unfortunately. But yeah, I've went and played.
Oh, that's all we got time for now.
I wouldn't even be upset if you'd done that to me.
No, I support Blackburn, so I can't even comment.
They still a team. So I just played football all my youth. I was playing football, signed for Palace at like really young. Then I went to Brentford, and then I played at Brentford until I got a pro contract there. So I was literally just playing football every day with mates. That was my youth.
And when did that end? And why?
Yeah, so I never could really break into the first team because the captain paid in my positions and he was never, ever injured. So I was always on the fringes. I knew the manager liked me, but it was kind of like a waiting game. And they was having a really bad season. I just wasn't really featured in the first team a lot. I had one opportunity and I completely bottled it, like literally completely bottled it. The captain got injured in the warm-up. He asked me to play, step in.
Yeah.
Just like completely overrun with fear. God knows. I still don't know to this day why. It's one of the biggest lessons that's kind of stayed with me.
Do you think that's your driver now for getting and challenging yourself?
I don't know. I know fear is I've got a much better relationship with fear now. Before, fear was like freeze, right? You normally like freezing fear. That's
yeah.
What I did in that time. Now I attack fear. I like fear because normally that's a stage of, it's a sign of growth.
Yeah. You're outside your comfort zone.
Outside your comfort zone. It's an opportunity to evolve, step into it. And that one lesson has taught me that, you know, whenever you get fearful, like right now, there's a lot going on in my life, loads of fear. I'm getting fear every day.
Yeah.
It's opportunity to grow. It's opportunity. So my relationship is much better with fear now than it used to be.
So you were in that first team moment and then was that it then? Was that just...
I bottled it. And then the manager got sacked within like a week, 2 weeks maybe, if that new manager...
For playing you?
I didn't play.
Did you not play?
Yeah. I didn't get on. So I only had like one... first start and as a pro, and never got opportunity again. That was it. Down into like the conference, and I played conference for a few years and then conference south and just like nicked a living, really, just doing that.
Do you still play now?
No, can't stand it.
Can you not?
No, I cannot stand football. I don't watch it, I don't play it, just don't.
Why is that relationship soured then?
I don't think I've ever been like crazy in love with the sport. I loved playing at the time and I loved like progressing and winning, but it was never, even back then when I used to play, I never used to think, oh, I'm going to make it to the Premiership or this is something I'm going to do for the rest of my life. I just didn't. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I didn't see it. Maybe it was a lack of belief. Who knows? But so now, like, I wouldn't sit and watch a game of football. If it was England or something like a big game,
yeah,
I'd watch it. But no, I think there's a better...
There's better things to do.
Better things to do than spend 90 minutes watching football. If my son or my daughter started playing football, I'd go watch football and enjoy it again, I'm guessing.
yeah.
Towards the end of it as well, it was just a massive chore. Like, you're travelling all over the UK, Tuesdays, Saturdays, it's just a pain. But I know what will happen. I'll get to the point where I can't play and then I'll regret not playing when I could have.
Do you have many regrets, Danny?
Do I have many regrets?
See, these are big questions now.
Yeah, no.
Because in my journey, I was in the army, I've presented radio, I've been an electrician, I've worked landscaping, I've done sales, like, and now I'm coaching and doing that type of stuff. That's what I want to move into. Mm. So there's nothing that I regret because everything has given me a lesson. Everything, like landscaping, yeah, I was working stupid 7 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock at night, digging turf and all that type of stuff. But that just taught me that hard work gets you somewhere. That's and there's lessons in everything. But I just wondered if you had any regrets about what you, any choices that you made.
No, I don't. I don't even think about. My brain doesn't even think in regret. It's just choice, isn't it? It's just decisions. I don't think in regret. Back then, if you had asked me, yeah, I would have regretted not stepping onto that pitch because that's what I was. That was my dream at that time. But now, no way.
What stopped you stepping on the pitch? Just your head.
Just think I was fearful, probably a lack of belief, overwhelmed, fight or flight. I definitely just was like scared.
Yeah.
Scared and overwhelmed. But yeah, I think that boils down to a lack of belief back then in my football. But a lot of people say, they used to say, oh, you're your own worst enemy because you're never good enough. Never, ever good enough. But I might have had like the best player on the pitch, but never good enough. And it probably was too far that way. Like it was too detrimental to me and my game long term. So that's another thing that I've learned from them. It's just like you have to pat in life, you have to pat yourself on the back. Like you have to. You also need to call yourself out on bullshit, but you have to be like, you have to acknowledge when you're doing well, because otherwise you're just continuously trying to push and nothing you do is good enough.
You do this on quite a regular basis as well, don't you? You call yourself out and you pat yourself on the back. You do it weekly.
Weekly reviews, mate. weekly and daily reviews. I've got so much on at the moment. I'm doing daily now. Daily reviews. Yeah, 3 daily objectives for the business, emotional, family. The main objectives for my day. What does success look like for the day? And then I'll leave a review in the evening as well.
Does that give you the structure and process to succeed, or is it all just subjective? My point is, if you didn't do that, do you think you'd be where you are now?
It's so progressive. I don't see me as being anywhere now. I just continuously, I used to chase this like vision of what success was. I don't do that no more because it's effort. You're fighting a losing battle because when you get there, it's always something else. I've now started to understand that you just got to enjoy the frigging journey. And that's what the reviews allow me to do. It allows me to take stock of what I feel is important on that day, where I could have improved, where I could have worked harder, where I was a bit weak, where I done well, and just plan the next day. Because otherwise you're just continuously trying to measure. I don't know if I'd be here.
There's always going to be somebody with a better car, always going to be somebody with a bigger house, always going to be somebody who earns more than you. Always.
I've gone down that road before when I used to do selling.
Yeah.
I used to work in a brokerage selling financial products. The main guys that were making tons and tons of money, you would jump on their wavelength to, well, you know, who am I going to hang around with? The guys that are earning nothing or the guys that are earning loads? Well, I'm going over there. But then you start buying into their philosophy. You know, it got to the point where it's like, buy one car. Okay, cool. Now you need a supercar. Right, now you need a Harley Davidson. Right, now you need a second car. Now you need this watch. And you're buying into all these other ideas because you're seeing that success. So you buy into their goals. When in fact, you don't even know who you are. That's what I found. So I completely stopped buying into other people's goals and success, their vision of success. It just, I don't even entertain it.
So where did your career go after you left football then?
What did I do? I left football, played semi-pro, and then I went and done a personal training, level 3.
Yeah.
I was a personal trainer. A terrible personal trainer, man. Terrible, terrible. I was good at making people sick, but very, very terrible. So I just set up my own personal training business with a pal. We used to do like boot camps in the park and stuff like that. It was all right. It was good. Earned a decent amount of money. It was just more so time consuming. You know, that whole trading your time for money?
Yeah.
It's like I'm capped at how much I'm going to earn in this
job. In that industry, yeah. Or in that job.
Yeah, in that industry. So, yeah, I got to the point where I was just continuously searching for more, wanted new challenges. And I saw my pal hadn't seen for years, drive past him, this new Porsche, hadn't seen him since we was younger, convertible, maybe like $8,000 car. I'm like, what the hell? Like, he was just like a normal dude we used to go clubbing with. And he started to tell me about what he's doing. He was a wine broker. And I was like, I basically had to beg him for a job for a year. He wouldn't give me a job. He just would not give me a job because he was so big on personal development. And he was like, the people around you, not right. And we was doing stuff. We'd go to his house and learn about goals, like how to write a goal, writing, doing a vision board.
Is he still in wine brokerage now?
No, he's on Instagram. Everyone should go and follow him. His name's Being Alfie. He's a legend. He's an absolute legend. But he's the first person that introduced me to mindset, personal development. And I literally was just obsessed with it. Jim Rohn,
yeah,
Tony Robbins. I was just like, every day.
I think Tony Robbins is the one that tips me over the edge in terms of when you focus on what you bring to yourself and when you focus on what you bring into your life and how you accept things. If you accept the lowest common denominator in any aspect of your life, you're going to get lowest common denominator results. That's it.
Yeah.
So you have to aspire and have to want more constantly.
Yeah. It's true. So is your go-to person when you're looking at personal development, is it Tony Robbins, do you find?
No. Not anymore. No, so in terms of personal development, I follow a lot of people on Instagram, Decent Knowledge. Tony Robbins is one of them because Tony Robbins hit me when he put out the Netflix documentary, I'm Not Your Guru.
Yeah.
And that really set everything in motion of like taking ownership and all that type of things. Because you can spin any aspect of your life. Like I grew up in children's home and foster care. I could have sat on that for the rest of my life and thought, you know, look at the hand I've been dealt. But then looking at how Tony Robbins dealt with it in that documentary and how he said, no, actually, you wouldn't be the person you are today with that inner strength and that drive and that commitment to being in charge of yourself. You wouldn't have any of that if you didn't grow up in that environment. So take it, own it, and then deliver something from it. Mm. So it's from there. To be honest, a lot of my mindset is introspective. I look at what I think I want and then go and get it. I've gone through a lot of work in the last year, working with somebody on a personal level to overcome some of the challenges, because I was very introspective. I was looking at myself far too much and not giving out to my family, not giving out to my wife, and making sure that I was also delivering for them. And then I think that's where sales changes come into it, because now I've got a personal goal of owning my own company, living on my own terms, but it's for us. It's not just for me. It's for the family, and making sure, like exactly like you are, you've got the goal to create this home. I see it all the time on Instagram stories. You've got the garden, you're doing the kitchen, all that type of stuff. And you've got that vision and that vision board of you looking through your doors and then seeing your kids. I hear it, man. And it's repeated and repeated and repeated. But I've got exactly the same. I've got a vision board with the car I want to drive. I've got the house I want. I want an office at the end of the garden with a podcast studio. I want all of that stuff. But that's all a means to an end. And the end is to live comfortably at home with my wife.
Yeah, man.
That's it.
Yeah, I think what drives me more, like looking at this house that I'm about to do, making it sound like it's a mansion. Guys, it's a terraced house, by the way.
But it is what you make it.
It's going to be our home till we move to like get the kids into a better school. But that being said, what's driving me, I don't care about the worktops and the floor. And I literally could have cared less. I care, like, all I know, I'm going to get hit with a fat bill. What I care about is like how happy my kids and my missus will be, especially my missus, her face when it's finished and she's entertaining them, like kids. And that's what's the motivator.
And it's small moments, isn't it? On the Friday night where you're opening a bottle of wine and you're sat there with friends around the table. It's that, and you can sit back and go, yeah, it was all worth it.
And I tell you what, right? This is what people do. I hate saying it like people, like I'm better, but what I'm trying to say is what is what a lot of people, I've done it before, is they might look at a goal, okay? And they look at the goal and they say a car, they might say they want to earn a certain amount of money, but they don't emotionally attach a feeling to achieving that goal. Once I understood this, my life changed. I'll give you an example. The first experience of this, of like being able to attract the thing I want. I was working in the wine brokerage and I was tanking. I was terrible at sales. When I say I was bad, I was stinking. I'd never got more than two clients in a month. And it was coming to the end. They was going to sack me. And Alfie, who was kind of like my mentor then, he said to me, you're scared. You're a pussy. You're completely afraid to commit to anything. And I was. Like, I was always like straight-laced, didn't want to commit to anything. When I say commit, financially push myself. It's like, you need to go and commit to something immediately. And they had this bonus at work where if you've got five clients, you've got $5,000 bonus. And I found this Audi TT convertible. And I was like, that is the car. I have to have that car. I was like so excited. I was beside myself. But I didn't have enough of the deposit because I'd just been tanking at work. And he was like, right, I'm going to give you the $2,000 deposit. Yeah. Now, two things are going to happen. You either leave at the end of the month or you hit the clients, you pay me back. I was like, shaking, literally completely shaking.
That's an ultimatum, isn't it?
Burn the bridges, man. I was like, right, I'm going to do it. I've got nothing to lose. I put the deposit down on the car. I went from one client a month. In that month, I got nine clients. Yeah. Nothing changed with my selling technique ability. Absolutely zero. The only thing that changed was my attitude and also my emotion to wanting that goal more than anything else. That was it.
That's powerful, isn't it?
Could you imagine? Like, I was like, oh, it's like finding treasure. I was like, oh my God.
That's the light bulb moment.
Crazy. Absolutely crazy. The challenge with that then became, you can't keep coming up with material things, because then you just, and I did attach myself to these material things over and over. And what happened is it got to the point where my outgoings was, I think, $8,000.
Wow. Yeah.
$8,000 before I could even eat. And then the company folded. So I literally was like, talk about pressure. I went from like earning crazy money to losing everything. Had to lose everything, had to sell everything and just rebuild again.
But you got no fear of that. And that's what I mean about experiences. Once you've gone through that pain now, you know that you can get through it. You can get through, if Gravity 7 folded tomorrow, and it won't, because I know the ethic behind it. But if Gravity 7 folded tomorrow, you know that you can start again, rebuild and get through it. And yeah. then the fear is dissipated because there is no fear then. And then you've got nothing holding you back.
It just turns into rolling up your sleeves. Is it sleeves or socks? I always get phrases wrong.
Pulling up your socks, rolling up your sleeves.
I always get somewhere in the middle. I like to just float around in the
middle. How did you start in marketing, Danny?
So that all stemmed from when everything crashed at the wine brokerage. Obviously, I was selling all my assets, living at my Mrs. Mum's house. Like, it was proper humble pie. And I was just like, okay, cool. What are we going to do? And I remember I teamed up with another guy who had another company, and I was just like, these leads are terrible. They're just always paying for paper leads or like data sources and just churning through data. And I was like, there needs to be a smarter way to get a warm lead or a customer. And that's when I started to understand Google Ads.
Yeah.
And I just spent hours and hours on the phone to Google support. We hired a few agencies first, and I was like, these guys are crap. They're all smoke and mirrors, charging us too much. We don't see our own data. I'm going to do it myself. I'm just going to do it myself. And I left him and I was like, right, I'm just going to sit on the phone to Google every day with their support. Until that's the days when you could actually get through to a really smart account manager. And I'll just sit on the phone asking every question under the sun. And I got really good at building landing pages. So I'd run Google Ads through a landing page, generate a lead, and then I would sell the leads and the data back to all of these companies that I know. And that's how I the agency started, really. Just grew from there. Then it went on to like Facebook ads and Instagram ads, and the obsession with lead generation focused on making a sale as opposed to like brand awareness or, you know, the vanity matrix that a lot of these agencies sell on.
I'll tell you what, it would be remiss of me and for the audience if I didn't ask you about your Instagram growth as well, because your Instagram blew up after January, didn't it?
Yeah, it went crazy. Absolute bonkers.
What do you put that down to? Just so, because these are the questions that people will want to ask you. And they're probably questions that you've got asked a million times.
Well, look, first and foremost, I'm not a graphic designer. I'm an entrepreneur and I'm an agency owner. My goal, Jan 4th, was to grow up my personal brand to generate more income sales for my business, in turn for my family. That's it. So in Jan 4th, I was like, right, I'm sick and deaf of me going into a pitch with a client and I'm the same as them. They've got no social proof. They've got no testimonials. They've got nothing really. It's all rubbish. I was like, right, we're going to put a stake in the ground. I'm going to blow up my own personal brand. And I committed with Dane Walker. I've worked with Dane for what? It's got to be 10 months, 9 months, whatever it is. I don't know, a month. And every 10. Day, 10, thank you. It's my birthday this month as well. Shocking. Every day we posted value-based content using carousels. If you don't know what carousels are, I'm pretty sure you will. But the idea is that you're adding value over 10 slides and you're keeping people on your profile as long as possible.
Yeah, the engagement rate goes up, doesn't it? Because you've got, well, the engagement with your profile goes up because you're spending more time flicking through and reading.
Yeah, it does. And there's no denying that. You get a hell of a lot of attention from the design community, which will accelerate your growth. But my goal was always to add value, monetize, and, you know, ethical business, you know, help other businesses grow, get leads, so on and so forth. So I'm always proud of, like, I think I'm going to hit like 51K today from 1,000. But the thing I'm most proud of is Instagram stories, because that happened before I grew and I was still making money through Instagram stories. And that's why I'm so passionate about getting other business owners to just show up on Instagram stories.
Tell you what, I never showed up on Instagram stories until Dan Thomas. I used to join Dan's lives and he had like 70 followers. But he would still be talking when there was one person in the room. Like, it would just be me and him, and he'd be talking to me about how to launch a podcast. And he is crazy, honestly. But then I thought, you know what? If he can do it to one person, then I can do it to the 200 that I had at the time. So I started doing it, and then I did my first Instagram Live with Dan Thomas, and then it just becomes a habit, and it becomes easier. One thing that I need to work on, and I'm sure that everybody in your audience needs to work on, is actually getting up and showing up with value, because I'm quite happy to show that I'm at the beach, but my audience don't want to know that I'm at the beach. They want to know that I've dealt with two or three things today, which they're probably dealing with. So I've got a salesperson today who is moaning because somebody else who's working on his patch, but how I deal with that internally would add value to my audience. So I should show up in my stories, and I've consciously think about it, but I don't ever put it out there because I'm dealing with it. Does that make sense?
Yes and no. So yes, it's true, but two, it's an excuse. And I only tell you that is because I've done it. And I still do it today sometimes. The other day, I didn't do a story till late, and Dad's like, I've been busy, guys. And I'm like, you absolute bellend.
You melt.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's an excuse. Where this is content. Everything can be spun into content. It's just whether if you want to focus in that area. Like, if we call it black and white, it's not a priority to you. You probably feel a little bit overwhelmed when you open it up and go to talk. So it's a chore. That's why you don't do it. But I guarantee if you stuck at it for 2 weeks and saw the result of the business and the engagement and the people following you, you would stick it out. And that's all that happened with me. It was like, I'm going to commit. It started with me in stories because I was scared to get on camera, totally petrified. And I was like, well, I can walk. I like walking and talking. So I'm going to start walking on stories and talking about things that I like, fitness, life, business. And then gradually it just started to evolve. And then I come up with like the four P's now, pillars of content that you show up in your stories with. And it's easy. It's easy to show people how to do that. It's easy to talk about it.
Did you experience a massive uplift in business as your personal brand grew?
Do you know what? I did. I think we got global reach, which is amazing. So we've got clients all over the place now, like US, Hawaii. I've got clients all over now. All over the place. So that's great. Agency's grown, like it's doubled in size. No, it's more than that. It's like 3 or 5x in size. So that's been amazing. It's just a lot.
Yeah.
So I haven't even taken stock of this year yet. I'm just trying to see out Q4 as big and as best as I can.
How far ahead do you look?
I struggle with big goals, like long-term goals. Really, really struggle. I'm like a 3 month.
Oh yeah.
One day to 3 month person. In terms of like goal setting, I really, really struggle for like long-term goals because there's so many variables and so many things that can happen. But yeah, so Q4 is like, I'm trying to finish, well, I'm going to finish the year strong. I started doing coaching, which I know you do now.
Yeah, yeah.
How are you finding that?
It's all right. It's not the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is to sit within businesses for a longer term. So that's the high ticket offer. But I need something to pay for what's going on at the moment, if that makes sense. I need to get some coaching in so that I can then progress the business to the next level. And it's about taking it in stages. So I'm taking some of the low-hanging fruit and doing the coaching. But then in the future, it'll be me sitting within a business for 3 to 6 months, telling them the direction they've got to take in order to change their sales, hence the name sales change, and then moving on to the next one and moving on to the next one. And that was an epiphany that got given to by one of my last bosses, who just said, look, you're great for a short-term, quick impact in a business, but not for long-term. Like, I love changing things up and making swift changes in a business in order to drive results. But I sitting there for 5-6 years and having a business plan which stretches 5 or 6 years just ain't me. That's just not what I love doing. So, yeah, the coaching is fun, but it's not the ultimate goal. It's not the ultimate goal.
I think, though, just based on, because we as Gravity 7 as a service, we have sales process on. It's like we have 3 things that we focused on: organic, paid, and selling, which is like sales process. You could easily sell sales process workshops. You could easily sell foot in the door products. I think just adding on the whole CRM side is a game changer for your
business. We've had a conversation about that, haven't we?
It's just because most sales teams, because when you start coaching, you're going to get individual people. When you start talking about CRM and systems, you're going to get you'll attract business owners that have team, and that's probably where you're going to have the biggest impact.
Yeah.
So I would create a foot in the door product to business owners that is like, we'll do a workshop and sales.
I'm writing it down. This is like a live coaching call now.
No, man, we're just
I know.
We're spitting together, but I think that's where I would go add on to you. And if you start showing up in your stories talking about that, people will raise their hand saying, "Fuck, I need to sit down and go over this, because I don't know what CRM. I'm still using spreadsheets. This is exactly what I need to do."
I'll tell you a prime example, and I'm releasing a YouTube video in like 2 weeks on this because I started recording it. I recorded it. I just need to edit it up. But my sales team, right? They were working from a non. Tell me now, how many emails do you have in your inbox? Because this is a prime example.
God knows, thousands.
Really?
Yeah.
Honestly, one of my sales guys had 8,000 emails in his inbox. And how can you? But how can you work with
that,
like? it's true though, because this is something that you might be struggling with. Yeah. But working from an inbox zero, so you use your inbox email inbox as a way to manage your workflow. And then every time you've done something, like you talk about it, but you delegate or you distribute it or you put it further or schedule it, you take it out of your inbox and put it somewhere else. So you've only got a finite amount in your workflow. Having that system in place means that you're efficient because you've only got 20 or 30 items that you need to work on.
But that probably comes from your military background, mate. There's a good trait. Like, you're doing is how it should be done.
Yeah.
Salespeople are like, they just want to be on the phone selling.
Yeah, totally.
Whereas if you've got that element to it as well, it's a really good positive. Like, but that's a really good thing. I struggle with systems processes. My brain just does not work like that. You could give me a system and it'd be amazing, and I'll find a way not to follow it. I just like going at speed.
But that's what salespeople do. They want to get from point A to point B in the fastest time possible and just get the money at the end of it. That's inherently what salespeople are like.
Yeah, they do. Ethically.
Yeah, totally in an ethical way, yeah.
No, but mate, that inbox ground, inbox? Yeah.
Inbox zero.
It sounds like a lovely idea for me. No, to be honest with you, I've changed that. I've made it so I've got like inbox,
sent
inbox, no, unread, starred, and everything else.
Yeah,
actually, there's a really good tool for you. It's called, I don't know why I'm waving my finger at you, it's called Spike. Have you heard of it?
No,
I got introduced to Spike the other day, and it's an email, it kind of like accumulates all your emails and groups them automatically for you. You know, like Gmail can be really confusing,
yeah.
It's like a WhatsApp conversation. So you can see the thread like a chat. It's really cool. It's really, really
cool. I'm going to check it out.
You're going to lose an hour of your time.
I've lost about 4 years of my life just trying to figure out Notion, Danny. So you...
Are you using those?
I use Notion for everything now. I subscribe to like 3 or 4 channels on YouTube to just... I've taken it to the next level though. So I've got action task databases. I've got a life dashboard to the next level. but it's super helpful, honestly.
Yeah, it's amazing. It is but the only trouble, see, if you become like a super user, I think they call them that, you might be able to build the project management side. But what I was finding for the agency, it just wasn't, I couldn't get it to work how I wanted. So we moved to ClickUp, which for project management is unbelievable. It's like Notion and Slack Monday put together. It's
weird. Yeah. So we're just coming up to the end of the podcast, and what we do on every single episode is ask the same 5 questions at the end. And I did send them to you because you look a little bit worried now. So the first question is, what's the worst job that you could ever do and why?
Jesus, you could have given me some prep here, man.
I did send you a 2-page prep sheet. I'll let you think about that one. I can edit this, so it'll really...
Hold up. Are you asking me like a job as in a task or an actual career?
Actual career.
Okay.
God, no one's ever thought about it. Huh?
I wouldn't work for anyone else. I'd refuse.
You just want to work for yourself?
Yeah, I don't want to work for anyone.
Perfect answer.
I just don't want to. I'll tell you why, and I'll give you the why behind it, is because that one time, 2 times where I've worked for a company, they've gone folded, and my whole life, my family has been dependent on that wage, I'll never put myself in that situation again.
Everything is down to you then.
100%. Take full responsibility.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
Footballer. I wanted to play football, but I didn't believe that I was good enough to make it in the big leagues.
What's the worst sales mistake that you've ever made?
The worst sales mistake? Oh, I've made a few, but telling's not selling. Telling is not selling. I used to get on the phone and ramble and try and pitch to people without listening. So you can talk people all day long. Doesn't mean they're actually going to buy. You have to ask good questions and listen your way into the sale. And once I understand that, that was the hardest lesson to learn.
Last 2 questions. Who is the leader that you look up to the most?
My granddad.
What did your granddad do?
He was just a frigging legend, man. He was just a legend. He taught me how to be a man. Like, not by telling me anything, just by me observing. How to deal with people, how to treat people with respect, how to lead a family. He's the dude.
Nice. That's a great answer. That's a great answer. And the final one is, what was the last book that you read?
What you should ask me is, what is the last book I've finished, which would be not meant. Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. I've recently just finished a book called Something Focused.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, we'll edit this and I'll Google it whilst we're talking.
It's about OKRs. OKRs, have you heard of them?
OKR.
Yeah,
put
in a book about OKRs.
OKR focused book. Measure What Matters?
Measure What Matters, that's
by John Doerr. Is that the one?
Yeah.
All right, let's ask the question again. Danny, what? This hasn't been edited at all. What's the last book that you read? Why are you fucking the guy now?
Measure What Matters. Measure What Matters by John Doerr.
John Doerr, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's about OKRs, and OKRs are objectives and key results. And it's all about how some of the biggest businesses in Silicon Valley changed the way they set goals for their company around objectives and key results. It's good.
Do you take stuff away from books?
I'm more visual, so I like watching videos more. So I do. But I'm not a fast reader. So sometimes I'll pick up a book. If I know that I'm rushing it and I'm reading through it just to finish the book, I'll put it down.
Yeah.
The best book I've ever read is The E-Myth. The E-Myth is unbelievable. That's about systems and processes for small business owners. What's yours, man? I'm intrigued to know what yours is.
Well, the last book that I read?
Yeah.
I'm reading 3 at the moment. So Copywriting Secrets is one.
Yeah.
There's a book called Getting Things Done.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the name of the author, but that's about getting stuff out of your head and getting it into, and that's what Notion basically is being used for at the moment, is getting that stuff done. And then what's the other one? Building a Story Brand. I think everybody's read that one.
Yeah, nice. I haven't read it, but I know the guy well.
Yeah.
I know the guy well.
Where can people find more information about you, Danny?
You can go and find more information on my Instagram, Danny Allen Page. Or you can type in on iTunes, Danny Allen Page podcast. Or if you want to check out my agency website, it's gravity7.co.uk.
Thanks, mate. Enjoy your day.
You're a legend.